The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Welcome to the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm Natalia Abrams, the president here at Student Debt Crisis Center, and this is the SDCC takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. It's been a couple of months since we've been here, and we have a lot to discuss. Today, we're going to be talking about President Biden's new plan to cancel student debt, Plan B, as we've been calling it, discuss very important deadlines coming up, and new information, and we will cover some of the recent updates that we are hearing from student loan borrowers, like maybe yourself if you're listening in. So today I'm joined here with our senior policy advisor, Spencer Dixon. Hi, Spencer, how are you?
Hi, Natalia, I'm doing well. Spring has finally sprung in DC, which I'm enjoying.
Wonderful. And we also have back again, as always, SDCC's Managing Director, Sabrina Calazans. Hi again for the 10th time this morning, Sabrina.
I know, we've only seen each other all day. I love it. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And if you're just joining us for the first time, we at Student Debt Crisis Center believe that by centering the needs and voices of student loan borrowers and partnering with allies and lawmakers, we will impact public policy and once and for all in the student debt crisis. If you want to learn more about the work that we do at Student Debt Crisis Center or read through crucial borrower stories to learn what it's like, sadly, to be a student loan borrower, you can visit our website at studentdebtcrisis.org or find us on social medias, all handles at debtcrisis.org on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. As I mentioned, we have a lot to discuss today, so let's jump right in. Sabrina, I'm going to give it to you first, and I also want to hear from you, Spencer. Can you do a quick recap, Sabrina, of what the president announced on Monday? I know folks are seeing it everywhere in the news. What's going on?
So in our last shows, we talked about something called negotiated rulemaking, which is a consensus-based regulatory process in order to outline some proposed rules by the Department of Education. And so the president, after the Supreme Court had struck down the original plan by the president to cancel student debt, the president announced he would be pursuing a Plan B through the HEA. And so we went through that process. After going through multiple phases of that, advocates had pushed for something called the hardship rule, pushing for folks who experience financial hardship to be included in discussions for canceled student debt. And we were able to get that. So then more recently, they released the outlined plan of what they hope to enact later this year when it comes to student debt cancellation. It is a bit wonky, and it is not as wide-ranging and wide-reaching as the original plan was. However, we welcome student debt cancellation, and we welcome the president taking action when it comes to student debt. We know it's a crisis here. It's more than $1.7 trillion in the United States. And so far, the president has canceled about $142 billion of student debt, which is incredible. That's about 4 million folks who have gotten their debts fully canceled. That is great. There are specific proposals. There's about 5 rules. So for that, I'm going to actually kick it over to Spencer, who has a lot more knowledge on this than I do. Spencer?
Well, I don't know about that, Sabrina, but I'm still happy to cover it. So as you mentioned, you know, there are 5 parts of this, but one overarching component of this Plan B is that it is meant to be automated. So much of the challenges of the existing student loan infrastructure, whether it's income-driven repayment or public service loan forgiveness or other kinds of student debt relief, borrowers have to apply for it. And that process can be onerous and complicated. And for many borrowers, they're just not aware of these programs. The idea behind these 5 buckets is that people will be able to get the relief automatically based off of information that the government, frankly, already knows about these borrowers. So it's closing these loopholes and making it an automatic process. So the first is waiving accrued interest. There are 25 million borrowers who owe more on their student loans than they did when they took out the loans to go to school. And that is because of runaway interest and borrowers not being able to keep up with the payments, given all the barriers that we've talked about before. And so what the...
Wait, and not to throw you off, Spencer, but can we just stop on that? Because I know the accrued interest is huge. Like, besides cancel student debt, the second thing our supporters tell us is they just want to get rid of the interest. So in your perspective as a policy person, is this the big deal that we should think it is?
It is a big deal. And boy, do you have a really singing bird in the background. That is our fourth guest joining us this afternoon. But it's a huge deal. I mean, think about, we've got 40 million plus student loan borrowers and 25 million of them owe more on their loans than they did when they took them out. I think that speaks for itself, that interest has been such a burden on borrowers, not just financially, but psychologically, like feeling like you're not being able to overcome this burden. And so the focus on interest is a big deal. And to your point, it's responsive to one of the main concerns that we hear from borrowers. So getting into the weeds a little bit of what the proposal is, it would be up to $20,000 of relief for accrued interest for single borrowers making $120,000 or less, or for married couples making $240,000 or less. It's those thresholds and above. If you're below those thresholds, you will have all of your interest wiped out that's been above what you took out. So really starting fresh for borrowers, which is going to be a huge relief. Other automated relief from this program would be, if your school closed and you didn't get a degree that was helping you, advance through your career. If you maybe work for a nonprofit or you work for the government, you're eligible for public service loan forgiveness, but you may not have applied. This rule would automate that process and get you the credit that you're looking for to get that forgiveness. If your program ended up being a junk program where, it wasn't providing you the advancement in your career and life that you were looking for, that's going to get you some relief. And then finally, if you were in repayment for 20 years for an undergraduate degree or 25 years for graduate degree, this regulation is going to provide you automatic relief, which would have normally taken an application process to do so. So really streamlining some major relief for borrowers if and when it goes into full effect. And Sabrina, speaking of this process, what's the timeline that we're looking at here for implementing this proposal?
Yeah, so the actual draft regulation should be coming out within the next few weeks. We're not certain exactly when, but at that point, anyone, including everyone who's listening, can actually submit a comment for this plan. That would be a public commenting period. With SDCC, with our organization, we will be expressing support for the plan, and we've actually started sending out a form, a sign-on letter that borrowers can sign onto and support. It will lay out what those rules are, again, as Spencer outlined them, and folks can share their story that way. The final regulation is then going to be published later in the summer or early fall, with hopefully relief coming to folks by the fall. So we're definitely going to be, following along, keeping close track of all of these developments as they come. But I know that millions of borrowers stand to benefit from this. I don't know, Spencer, if you mentioned it, I might have missed it, but more than 25 million borrowers owe more than they originally borrowed, it's estimated, which is just crazy to think of. Folks have been making payments for years. And to, again, as you said, not see your balance go down is frustrating. Mentally, it caused a lot of stress. It is a mental health issue for a lot of folks. And so we're glad to see that folks are going to be able to benefit from this relief. And while I was just mentioning earlier the process, we know that this plan B was a result of what the Supreme Court said. So after the break, we're actually going to get into why we're going through this alternative route, what the president is hoping to keep doing when it comes to student debt, because we know he's been taking lots of action. So with that, I'll toss it back to Natalia.
Thank you, Sabrina. And after the break, I also want to ask you about how this impacts or works for young people. So let's put a pin in that. And, you know, I think this is just so important to know that the president is using every tool in his toolbox to try to cancel debt. You know, as an advocate, I was so pleasantly surprised that he came out on the day we lost at the Supreme Court and said, okay, we lost here, but we are going to do this another way. And he hasn't given up, and they're doing rallies and getting the word out there everywhere they can. So stay with us. I'm Natalia Abrams. This is the SDCC takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show, and we'll be back shortly.
All right, welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm Sabrina Calazans, and I'm joined by SDCC's Natalia Abrams and Spencer Dixon. And today we are taking over for Leslie Marshall and discussing the recent developments in the student debt space. Now, before the break, we were talking about the president's latest attempt to cancel student debt and all that comes with that. So, Spencer, I was trying to set you up for a question right before the break of, you know, the legal grounds and standing. We know that that was a big piece in the Supreme Court's decision to strike down the plan. So how does this differ from the president's original plan?
Great question. One, I think the Supreme Court was wrong in striking down President Biden's initial plan on many grounds, but we won't focus on that today. And even though they are very different in terms of the approach and the legal authority, I will never underestimate the extremism and activism of the Supreme Court and the conservative majority there. But it is really important to focus on the differences between that initial plan and this one. So first, the initial student debt relief that President Biden rolled out back in 2022 that the Supreme Court did strike down, that relied on the HEROES Act, which established emergency powers that the Department of Education could use to negotiate what student loan borrowers were had to repay. And that came about essentially through an executive order. It was the White House saying, this is the plan, borrowers can apply in the coming weeks. And the administration was days away from starting to roll out some of that cancellation before the court stepped in. This new plan relies on the Higher Education Act, which goes back to 1965, although it was, you know, amended over the years. And the main regulatory framework that most regulations when it comes to student loan debt fall under is the negotiated rulemaking process that you mentioned earlier. And I mean, whether you think of any of the income-driven repayment plans or so many of the details of the programs like public service loan forgiveness, all of those have come about over decades through this process. So we are building on a framework that is much stronger and has much more historic precedent. And it's my hope that it will be strong enough to withhold the activism of the Supreme Court.
I hope so. But with that, we've also seen some other announcements over the past few months. Natalia, we've been talking about the SAVE plan here and in our work through the Save on Student Debt campaign, but there is a low balance borrower provision that started to kick in. Can you talk about what that is and who stands to benefit from that?
Yeah, great question, Sabrina. So part of the SAVE plan is that if you originally borrowed $12,000, and that's what you initially took out, not all of that crazy interest that could have compounded and capitalized onto your loan. We know plenty of people that owe tens of thousands more than that original 12. But if you took out originally $12,000 and are enrolled in the SAVE plan, after 10 years, you will see your debt forgiven and or completely canceled. And it's not an all or nothing thing. It goes up from there. You know, if you have anything over $12,000 to $13,000, it's an additional year, up to, I believe, 21 or 22,000. So this is really great for folks that attended college a long time ago, attended some college, community college. This applies to folks in school right now that enroll into the SAVE program. So this is a really great provision. This was another question I had for you, Sabrina, before the break, but I think this is encouraging to young people who maybe take some college classes or community college to know that if they never exceed that amount, they'll be done in 10 years. But as our resident young person, how do you feel about these new proposals and whether or not they're talking to young folks?
Yeah, so I think I have I'm fortunate to be able to work in this space and see how it impacts so many other folks, but then I can also think of it on a personal level as a borrower. And so while I look at the plans that were outlined by Spencer and I might not necessarily benefit from any of those, we have seen the Biden administration take steps and actions to ensure that the student loan system is improved. We've seen the SAVE plan be proposed and cut, you know, payments for so many folks, helping a lot of people secure a $0 payment. There's going to be different provisions taking place later this summer. We've seen the IDR account adjustment kick in. We've seen changes to the public service loan forgiveness program. So it gives me hope as a young person to see that the system is, you know, so much more improved now as I enter into repayment than it was years ago, where older folks encountered so many more hurdles when it came to their loans, whether it was being steered into forbearance or it was being denied for something that they were supposed to get their loans discharged. So for me, it really is something that provides hope. But I think it also, we have the responsibility to continue providing outreach and informing folks about these programs. There are a lot of people that don't know about the SAVE plan, that don't know about IDR plans, or public service loan forgiveness. So we have a responsibility to talk about that. And I think we have a responsibility also to keep pushing the Biden administration. You know, we're advocates. Our job is always to push for improvements, for changes, and for cancellation. And that's the mission of our organization. And so to end the student debt crisis, we need to push for student debt cancellation and also talk about the cost of college. That's something that, you know, we've been hearing time and time again, how expensive it's been, how expensive it's gotten. It just goes, you know, it just increases on a yearly basis. And we've gotten to a point where it's not sustainable and the student debt burden for folks just continues to increase. It impacts so many folks. It then causes parents to take out Parent PLUS loans. It becomes a cyclical generational thing. And so there's a lot of work ahead, but I'm really, really happy that there's a lot of work being done in the present too.
So well said. And, you know, I've been saying something similar, which is, if we have to be in a lending for education system, which we all don't want to be in and fight actively against, President Biden has been fixing all of the broken parts of the student debt system. So, you know, public service loan forgiveness will not be as bad for you as even if it was for Spencer, right? You don't have to be that old, so to speak, for the student loan system to have been terrible to you. So we are fixing that. I mean, I know there's a big hearing going on right now.
Oh, yeah. If there's
Speaking
one thing
of fixing the student loan system.
If there's one thing we like to do, it's trash talk Mohila and the servicers. So, Spencer, can you give us a preview of what we're going to be chatting about in the next segment?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a hearing taking place as we speak. The CEO of Mohila was invited, but I will say cowardly did not show up, can't defend their record. But, I think we're going to be seeing some accountability held to Mohila. Senator Warren serves on the committee on which the hearing is happening. And the Biden administration has done some accountability measures, but that work is always needed to make sure that the service that borrowers are provided is improved.
Absolutely. We're going to talk a lot more about this, so stay with us. This is the SDCC Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm Natalia Abrams, joined again by Sabrina Calizans and Spencer Dixon, and we are from Student Debt Crisis Center. Before the break, we were just starting to discuss the current hearing going on right now that Senator Warren is was supposed to be grilling the executives of MOHIA, as Sabrina said, the loan servicer we all love to trash talk, but he didn't show up. But you know who did show up? Student loan advocates, Senator Warren, and I'd love to get kind of a readout from what's been going on so far with the hearing. Sabrina, can I start with you on that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've been hearing from borrowers and also from the Department of Education who actually withheld payment to MOHELA because of these errors. So we've been seeing them provide borrowers with incorrect information. Borrowers have been calling to try and get information and are encountering long wait times. I know Spencer is a testament of that, even though it was in MOHELA. And we've been seeing incorrect or late billing statements. And overall, borrowers have just been experiencing, you know, frustrations with all of this. Can you imagine you try and call customer service and you're on the phone for 3 to 4 hours trying to get information when their sole job is to provide you with information? I mean, it's just ridiculous at this point. I mean, there's just no words. It's truly infuriating, Spencer.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing, Sabrina, so we have Shayna Hayes, who is at the hearing and sending us information right now. And I believe they said there's a 33% call abandonment rate. That means they're just dropping the calls when you wait. We've heard of people waiting. So again, can you imagine waiting 3 or 4 hours and then just dropping the call and you have to start all over again? Just so crazy. Sent incorrect bills to 300,000 borrowers. Sent late bills to 2.5 million borrowers. They have a backlog of public service loan forgiveness forms up, hit over 1 million backlog.
Oh my God.
This is just a snapshot of how terrible, you know, so cash talk might be too nice of a word.
Yeah.
Right. It's not only the record of the failure to provide the service to borrowers, but it's also what one could argue is a cover-up to prevent that service from happening in the first place. So they implemented a call deflection scheme where they diverted callers from live agents to dead ends and directing them to the website when, you know, we know student debt is complicated and borrowers deserve that one-on-one guidance that they are owed by these servicers who we all pay through our tax dollars. And speaking of tax dollars, the federal government paid MOHELA throughout the pandemic during the payment pause, even though they have much less work to do. And rather than, you know, save some of that money or be able to be prepared for the payment restart that happened last fall, they didn't. And the effect of that was incredibly poor customer service that's resulting in real harm for millions of borrowers around the country.
Yeah. And it's probably no surprise if folks on the call, but Scott Buchanan on the other side, not the student loan advocate side, you know, is saying that they make, quote, we all make mistakes from time to time, and then went on to share that it's failures of the Department of Ed and FSA, just finger pointing. And, you know, the only fault of the Department of Ed or the White House is keeping MOHIA's servicer, right? But, you know, when you're calling MOHIA and they're dropping your call, that is not the fault of another agency. And they just can't take any accountability, let alone show up.
Absolutely. And last month, early last month, we launched our Realities to Return to Repayment survey, and we collected responses from nearly 17,000 folks, which is incredible. But we asked them specifically about student loan servicers and how they, you know, how their experience has been. And we found that more than half of borrowers who contacted their servicer came away with unanswered question. Again, imagine you're waiting for hours and you come away with unanswered questions. That's not the experience that you want for yourself. 75% are not confident in the information provided by their student loan servicer as being complete and accurate. And a quarter of borrowers feel that the information provided by their servicer is generally untrustworthy. So it feels like it's a maze. It feels impossible at this point. You call your servicer, you can't get the correct information, if you can even get information. Then studentaid.gov is a great resource, but I understand, like, we are folks that are there all the time. We understand the language, and even then we have a hard time understanding. So for folks who aren't used to this, to go on to try and get that information and make sense of it is really, it really is frustrating. I don't know.
And I just remember those questions on our survey, borrowers did feel more confident with the Department of, you know, just to go to what Scott Buchanan was saying, they do feel more confident with the Department of Education and FSA than their servicers. You know, folks that are a little older, like myself, may remember Sallie Mae. Then it became Navient, and that was the big bad in our space. Mohia definitely has earned, you know, first place in terms of being the big bad. You know, this is the same Mohia that sued the government that helped block debt cancellation for 40 million Americans. It's wild to me that, you know, any dime of my taxpayer dollars goes to a company that does this and harms students. And, you know, you were saying if you're on hold for hours, then you get the wrong information. But what if you get the right information and you send your form, and now we hear a million forms are just backlogged. Logged, and that's why they're not getting any information.
Right.
So any more points from the hearing? Because you did mention something, Sabrina, just about how there is so much, you know, new programs and new information. So I want to make sure that we have time during the show to untangle some of that. We do that. We've been doing that every show that there's been new plans, but just wanted to give folks to wait if there was any last points on the hearing.
I'm not sure if I have any points on the hearing, but I know that you mentioned Navient, and I believe that Mohila is going to be taking on the portfolio of Navient. Isn't that correct, Spencer?
That's right. I believe they should have already taken ownership of those accounts already. And, you know, that's happened on many occasions. I myself am on my third student loan servicer. Now, granted, Mohila is the public service loan forgiveness servicer, which isn't a great sign for that program. But borrowers can often feel tossed around going from, you know, one bad servicer to another. But, you know, accountability is the first step. And we want to thank the administration for sort of laying the groundwork here, but especially Senator Warren for leading this investigation. And our partners at Student Borrower Protection Center for unveiling some of this mistreatment.
Absolutely. Special shout out to Persis Yu from Student Borrower Protection Center that is testifying as we speak. And to Senator Warren and the other senators that showed up. This is actually a subcommittee hearing, and often you don't see other members show up, but it sounds like the lawmakers showed up, the advocates showed up, but Mohia didn't have the guts to. So to me, that just says it all, right? if you're doing nothing wrong, then there should be no reason why you can't show up.
Right. Their absence speaks volumes. They can't.
All right. Well, let's not be the bad servicers, and let's try to explain what's going on with recent updates. So Sabrina, we'll definitely pick this up before or after the break, but do you want to start with like the most important deadline right now for folks to keep in mind, and then we can go over the available plans?
Yeah, absolutely. The current deadline right now to safely consolidate and maximize your payment counts is April 30th. We are coming very close to then. We are encouraging folks to go to studentaid.gov to consolidate their loans, submitting the application by the 30th. Your loans do not have to be processed by that date. You just have to submit the application by then. So if you go to studentaid.gov, you can find on the toolbar the option to consolidate. You will be able to do that. If you have commercially held FFELP loans, or you have Perkins loans, or you took a gap between undergrad and grad school, we encourage you to consolidate your loans. It is the best thing that you can do to maximize your payment counts. We're going to get into that very shortly, but I also do want to note that if folks are experiencing errors or problems with their loan servicer, whether it's Mohila or someone else, you can go to studentaid.gov and submit a complaint. That is something that you can do to escalate your situation.
That's a great piece of advice, Sabrina. And just to build on the consolidation deadline, if you had to make payments during the payment pause, that means you had commercially held FFELP loans, which are the loans that really, really would benefit. There's really no downside to submitting that application. So you can go to studentaid.gov, takes about 20 minutes. It could be the thing that saves you thousands of dollars.
Consolidate April 30th and join us after the break. This is Natalia Abrams, and we are doing the Leslie Marshall Takeover Show. Talk soon.
Welcome back to the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Sabrina from the Student Debt Crisis Center, and I'm joined by my colleagues Natalia Abrams and Spencer Dixon. Right before the break, we were discussing some of the updates related to student debt cancellation and the programs that are currently available to borrowers. So we're going to dive right into that and make sure that you're informed and are aware of what actions need to be taken by April 30th. So again, we were talking about April 30th being the consolidation deadline. Spencer, you were just talking about who should be doing that. Can you just do a quick reminder for folks?
That's right. If you had federal student debt and had to make payments during the payment pause, that means you have loans that really would benefit from consolidating. So we really encourage you to apply, finish your application before or on April 30th. The other major segment are people like myself. I'm actually going to be submitting my application in the next week or so. I took a break between undergrad and grad. And the reason I would benefit along with others is that the payment credits that you applied on your undergrad loans, which are your older loans, would be applied to your entire consolidated loan portfolio, meaning the newer loans I have, my grad loans, would have a longer repayment credit history than they really typically would. So that's going to speed up my pathway to forgiveness. So if you're in either of those scenarios, really encourage you to go to studentaid.gov and get that application completed by April 30th.
Awesome. Thank you for that refresher. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the name of a program, and I would love for you and Natalia, I'm going to alternate, to say what it is and who really stands to benefit from it. So Natalia, I'm going to kick it off to you. Let's start with the income-driven repayment IDR account adjustment. What is that?
So the one-time IDR account adjustment is, just saying it in a quick sentence.
I'll give you two sentences.
Okay, yeah. So the one-time account adjustment is, it's largely, I can start with who benefits. It's largely for older borrowers or borrowers who have been in repayment 20 or 25 years. And what it does is it's going to take a look at those times that you were probably in forbearance for far too long or deferment and give you time counted. They find that, you know, so many borrowers will benefit, you know, at least a little bit, but we have been finding borrowers that have been in repayment 20 or 25 years, even if they had periods of time that they were not on an income-driven repayment plan, are seeing their debt completely canceled. We expect to see another tranche of debt canceled before July 1st. And, you know, this is one of the biggest reasons we're encouraging borrowers to consolidate. You need to have an education-held loan, which can be an FFEL loan. But if you have one of those commercially held FFEL loans, you must consolidate to take advantage of this. And the best way to know if you were part of that was you had to make mandatory payments during the pandemic.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Spencer, I'm going to toss the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program to you. And if you can also just flag for folks what's going to be happening with processing in a few months.
Sure. So PSLF is a program that provides your whole student loan balance forgiven after 10 years of repayment that overlaps with 10 years of service where you are working for any level of government or a nonprofit organization. It doesn't matter what job you do, it matters who your employer is. And, you know, there's information on how to apply and the details on studentaid.gov. To your question about the next couple months, I know both you and I are pursuing PSLF, and it's important for folks who are also on that track to know between May and July, there is going to be a delay in the processing of the employer certification form, which is basically the PSLF form. Fear not, you know, your payments and credits during that period will still be covered. You'll sort of get the back credit. If you happen to reach your forgiveness during that time, the extra payments that you will have had to make will be credited. But just know that any delays in processing time between May 1st and the end of July is part of an intentional transition from processing paperwork from MOHELA directly to the government, which, you know, at SDCC, we view that as, you know, a positive step. Borrowers tend to trust studentaid.gov more. The service tends to be a little better. And so even though there might be a short-term pain, this is an improvement over the long run.
That's great. The next thing on my list here is the SAVE plan. And I know we talked about it a little bit before. We talked about the low balance portion. So Natalia, can you talk a little bit about the other provisions and what folks can expect starting this summer?
Absolutely. So this is, and just correct me if I'm wrong, anyone with a direct student loan can take advantage of the SAVE plan. Karen, so we're not going to get into it today. There may be an option called double consolidation. We get this question all the time. How do parents apply? I highly suggest looking into NPR on our YouTube page. Spencer and Sabrina have done a great training to go through that. So there is some loophole and ways for parents to apply, but for all the other borrowers, if you have a direct loan, undergraduate, graduate, you can take advantage of the SAVE plan. It will lower your payment like an income-driven repayment plan. It is one. It will tie it to your income. And for undergraduate borrowers, as of July 1st, or this coming July 1st, payments will be cut from 10% of discretionary income to 5%. That means payments will be cut in half as of July 1st. For borrowers that have a mix of graduate and undergraduate loans, it will be a weighted average, but you still should see your payments decrease after July 1st. The other really huge part, because we were talking about interest earlier, is the fact that the government is going to pay the unpaid interest. This means that unlike older income-driven repayment programs, you're not going to see your balance creep up and make it discouraging for you to pay off your loan. So the SAVE program is the best new repayment program that we have. And we highly recommend anyone with a direct loan, especially low income borrowers, borrowers with family, you know, larger families, family sizes taken into account to look into applying and see if it will lower your payments.
Awesome. We have two more to go and only a couple of minutes. So Spencer, Fresh Start, if you can go over that.
Fresh Start is a program that allows borrowers to get out of default much easier than pre-Biden era programs. You can apply over the phone, online. You basically just need to say, I'm in default and I'd like to pursue Fresh Start. And it accelerates the process of getting out of default and thereby unlocking eligibility for programs like SAVE, getting forgiveness, but you have to take action before the end of September of this year because it's tied to the end of the payment pause. So really encourage folks who may be in default to take advantage of that before that deadline.
And last but not least, Natalia, if you can go over the on-ramp program.
Yeah, so for anyone who is just hearing about these programs, who doesn't want to make a payment, maybe the income-driven repayment programs are too expensive, which shouldn't be the case. There is this on-ramp period. So if you haven't made a payment yet, you have not deemed, you're still considered good standing. Now, I don't want folks to get too excited because you are accruing interest. And that was the big deal during the payment pause, that you weren't accruing interest. You also aren't counting time towards an income-driven repayment program or towards public service loan forgiveness, but you aren't, you will not be put into default, which is typically 9 months after you miss a payment. This ends October 1st, so please look into repayment programs if you're someone who hasn't made a payment in the last 6 or 7 months.
Whew, that was a lot of information, but thank you both for covering that. As Natalia said before, we have recordings of previous workshops that also talk about these programs in depth. You can find it on YouTube. Just look up Student Debt Crisis Center and you'll find it. We have a lot of things that we're working on in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be doing in-person workshops in Arizona. So if you or someone you know is based in Arizona, you can go to our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at debtcrisis.org, and you should find our upcoming programming. You'll find the dates and locations for these workshops. We're also going to be doing another Cancel Student Debt Voices event in the next couple of weeks as well. We're looking forward to that. And as always, we have our monthly workshop. So I just want to thank you, Spencer and Natalia, for being here as always. Thank you all for tuning in to the SDCC takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. If you want to learn more about our work, receive updates on student debt, or just read through borrower stories, visit our website at studentdebtcrisis.org. And hopefully we'll see you next month. Thanks, y'all.